What's up? You're listening to the Electric Runway Podcast, a podcast on how emerging technologies are transforming the business of fashion and beauty around the world. I'm your host, Amanda Costco. Thanks so much for tuning in. From leather grown from mushrooms to sequins made from plants, biomaterials is an exciting area of innovation that's projected to reach almost $50 billion by 2025. Briefly put, biomaterials combine science and technology to engineer new ways of producing materials. Biomaterials are rapidly gaining popularity with brands and consumers alike due to their ability to address the fashion industry's urgent environmental and ethical challenges. Our guest today is Laura Hayes. She's the Senior Brand Partnerships Manager at Kiehl Labs, a company that describes itself as a platform for innovation. They believe the ocean has the potential to accelerate our planet's development to a more sustainable future. The company's flagship product, Kelsen Fiber, has a significantly lower environmental footprint than conventional fibers. Here to tell us more about Kiehl Labs and the exciting world of biotechnology is Laura Hayes. So Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat today.
So Kiehl Labs is most known for creating yarn made from seaweed. Can you tell us about the process of turning this raw material into something workable for the fashion industry?
Yeah, so I work at a company called Kiehl Labs, and we make next-gen material solutions, and our flagship product is a seaweed yarn called Kelsen. So I think just to start with, so Kelsen can be used in, I guess, a wide range of applications, so not only for fashion and apparel, but also things like home furnishings, consumer packaged goods, automotive sectors. The world is sort of our oyster there. But if we were to kind of zero in a little bit on that process from, I guess, getting that raw material and turning it into something workable for the fashion industry, we start with seaweed. We use actually a brown seaweed species. We also work with farmers who use a variety of methods in farming that seaweed. And we also have things like supplier evaluation forms, just to ensure that each supplier that we do work with meets our own set of criteria. So that can be really anything from third-party certifications, so things like memberships, evaluations, all the way through to things like tracking of chemicals, because all of that information is very, very important today. The tracking of supply chain, not only for, I guess, you know, the fashion industry as a whole, but also for next gen material companies, is super, super important. So we just really need to make sure at that point even that we are working with suppliers who really meet our kind of value set. So that seaweed is farmed, then it's dried and chopped. And then we move through to the next step, which is the extraction process. So we work with a handful of partners, so based globally, who extract something called alginate, which is a seaweed-derived biopolymer, which we use to create our fiber. So this ingredient called alginate is extracted from that dried and chopped seaweed right from the beginning of the process. Then, so the next step there is actually fiber production. So this is really where our IP comes into play. And what our partners do is they actually, so that extracted alginate is mixed with other green chemistry elements to create a spinning solution. Now, a spinning solution is something that is involved in the fiber production process. And that solution is mixed either in-house, so in North Carolina, on our fiber lines, or with contracted partners that we use as well. We actually produce those fibers. I don't know if your audience would be familiar with types of spinning methods, but we use a wet spinning process, which is very similar to how, for example, viscose is produced. And all of that is done within existing yarn and textile infrastructure, which means it's really a drop-in solution, both, you know, for us and also for our partners. And then so the next step after that is actually the yarn production. So the fibers are then spun into yarns. So using, again, traditional yarn spinning processes. And yet again, for this step as well, we use existing manufacturing infrastructure. And the next step there is then the yarn distribution. So after the yarn is produced, it's then sent back to our headquarters in North Carolina for a final quality control check. That's conducted. And then we're able to send the material out to our customers, who are basically right now the apparel and fashion brands. They then go to their supply chain partners. So they could be a variety of types of partners. So we work with supply chain partners, with our customers who handle everything from sort of new concepts and designs all the way to the final product. Or it could be a knitwear partner who simply takes the yarn and knits it using their knit machines to create prototypes for our customers. But I guess all that to say is there's a variety of different ways that the yarn is then used. So within knit and weaving machines to create those end products. So things like t-shirts, dresses, homeware. Yeah, lots of different designs are created.
And how does the actual material compare to others when it comes to performance? And also, I'm interested in end of life, because often we've seen these experiments with next generation materials, but they don't actually stand up to something like a traditional material. So what is the performance like? And what is the end of life like?
Yeah, totally. It's a really good question. I think those two factors are really becoming important for next gen materials at the moment. So I guess just firstly address the footprint of Kelsen. So obviously by using, you know, kind of renewable and regenerative kelp and underwater ecosystems, we're actually able to generate 70 times less water usage over cotton, which is it's a major figure. And then by using, of course, then, you know, marine-based solutions, we're not using any land. So for example, cotton uses 2.5% of the world's arable land. We're using obviously 100% less land use. And it's also, you know, Kelsen, the creation involves a complete elimination of pesticide use as well. To give you another idea there, we always benchmark against cotton, just to give you the reasoning here, but cotton accounts for 16% of all pesticide use. And with Kelsen, we have a complete elimination of pesticide use. And then finally, when we're kind of addressing that topic of footprint, Kelsen also has a 76% reduction in CO2 emissions when compared to cotton. And I think, you know, in terms of things like performance, so Kelsen performs very like a viscose in terms of things like tenacity, elongation, sustainability, abrasion properties. So when addressing end of life, we've recently got results back from composting testing. And when composted, Kelsen fiber shows an 82% degradation in 61 days. So that really indicates that the material is highly compostable under, of course, very precise composting conditions.
Well, it sounds like it's definitely an innovation in terms of production, the amount of chemicals that you mentioned, the carbon footprint. I haven't felt the fiber, but it sounds like it performs well. And then also when it comes to end of life, it sounds like it's composting faster. So it really sounds like a dream material. So I can understand why you'd attract the attention of some brands and designers that want to work with you and to have a legacy of doing good in the fashion industry. So recently, Kia Labs showed off its kelp yarn at Paris Fashion Week. Can you tell us about your collaboration with Stella McCartney?
Yes, absolutely. That was a major, major milestone for us and a lot of time in the making. A lot of these conversations started even before I had joined the company. Like anything with partnerships, you have to make sure that it's aligning perfectly with your own goals, strategy, and product roadmaps as a company. But choosing Stella McCartney, first of all, the company vision at Stella McCartney is so aligned with what we're doing at Kiel Labs. The products that they're making and wanted to make with Kelsen were amazing. And how and when they wanted to introduce those products was perfectly aligned with our own roadmaps. So I think it really depends on the brand, how long it takes to bring a product to market. But the amazing thing about the Stella collaboration was that they are such an agile company. They have, you know, this amazing kind of large and engaged community of consumers and an amazing customer base and have an amazing experience and know-how when it comes to similar collaborations with, you know, sustainably focused companies and next-gen material companies. So getting something to the market quickly was definitely something that we were really excited about when working with them, creating that kind of, you know, proof of concept and showing it to the world. And we chose Stella for that reason. And there's a massive impact in working with a company like them. It's also quite easy to implement a partnership with a company like Stella, just because, like I say, they know what they're doing, basically. But that said, yes, it still took a while to bring this collaboration to fruition, but kind of deep dive into how that worked. We basically, over the course of a couple of months, worked with Stella, number one, in delivering them a couple of kilos of Kelsen so they could go away, they could knit prototypes, get a feel for the yarn, evaluate it, see if it would work in their collection firstly. And then when we got the feedback that yes, they love the yarn, it looks great, the hand feel is amazing, it had kind of a soft, cool hand feel, I remember them saying, they then decided, okay, like, you know, we want to use this yarn, how are we going to use it in our collection? What kind of design are we looking for? And, you know, a lot of that was very, very closely managed by their design team. I don't know if, you know, anyone saw sort of the actual end product. Definitely have a look online if you haven't, but it was a beautiful hand crocheted dress made locally in the UK with laser cut mirrors. It was truly, honestly, a work of art seeing it in person and seeing the amazing reaction to it as well. So seeing people coming up and like, there's nothing like a customer being able to, after so long talking about a material and sending out swatches, for a customer to actually be able to see the end result and kind of imagine what that could look like in a piece of clothing that they might wear. So it's really a jumping off point for us. It's the first of many collaborations that will be coming in the next couple of months and couple of years. We couldn't have dreamed of a better partner to launch with and to have that world's first Kelsen launch with. And we were very, very happy as well with, you know, how much press was garnered and generated by the launch as well. Something that we're seeing a lot of people mention to us. I'm hearing a lot about it when I talk with other customers, for example. It's providing a lot of inspiration for other customers and other brands when they look at their design, what they want to create. Just seeing something, you know, a proof of concept out there has really kind of led to a lot of, you know, further kind of inspiration for our customers.
Yeah, and I wrote something recently for the Electric Runway Report, which is our online newsletter, and it talked about this idea of quiet innovation as a, you know, not as opposed to, but kind of maybe an extension of quiet luxury, right? We have this moment, this movement in the fashion industry about quiet luxury, so we're moving away from the logo mania. And my observation was that in the same way, we're kind of moving away from the innovation on the runway that's like blinking and flashing and like announces itself as tech and innovation. And I think Kiel Labs kind of falls into that category in the sense that you do have this innovation, but it's happening behind the scenes. The product can be shown on the runway, but there is a piece of education that has to happen for the viewer to understand that what you're actually looking at was made in a totally different way than traditional fashion. Now, I want to talk about, in terms of branding and positioning, Kiel Labs used to operate under the name Algae Knit. Now, what did the name Kiel Labs do for you in terms of a branding and positioning perspective? In other words, what can you do as a lab that you couldn't do just as a knit?
Yeah, I'm still getting, actually, when I go to summits, conferences, things like that, people who have recognized us as Algae Knit have followed us from those days. We actually had a rebrand. It was about a year ago now, but Algae Knit, it functioned beautifully as a literal communication of what we were doing. I mean, knit was in the name, right? So, you know, the applications were kind of obvious. But I think since Tess and Alex founded the company in 2017, that has worked well for us. But they also started to kind of recognize that there was a few limitations and challenges that it brought for the future of the company. As we kind of grew and actually wanted to diversify our product offerings. So yes, knit is in the name and knit is definitely the first kind of application that we're seeing customers veer towards. But there's other different applications that we might want to explore in the future. So things like wovens, non-wovens, films. And we were kind of really seeing that in order to kind of transition into this globally recognized leader in innovation, sustainability, and biomaterial know-how, we needed to kind of undergo a bit of a change. We were seeing it kind of essentially pigeonholing the application of our product. Sometimes it was actually challenging to pronounce as well, kind of on an international stage. And it wasn't necessarily hindering innovative mindset, but we definitely saw that going in a direction of having kind of this wider parent company and then having our product sit below that, beneath that, felt the way our company was going. And I think, you know, a lot of our peers in both next gen materials, but also in the fashion and apparel industries do actually use a similar type of brand architecture where they have the parent company, and then within that, they have their range of maisons, they have their range of products or brands, for example. So ultimately now, Kiel Labs is very much it functions as a hub for not only Kelsen, which is our flagship fiber right now, but other products that we'll eventually be creating and other climate-focused solutions derived from nature. So not only potentially from the ocean, but from other areas as well. And definitely it provides a little bit more room to create, basically.
So last year, Kiel Labs raised a Series A round that brought the total funding for the company to almost 18 million. And H&M Co Lab, the investment arm of H&M, is one of your investors. Now, can you talk, this is really a question about scalability. Can you talk about how Kiel Labs can go from working with a designer like Stella McCartney, which is a smaller run of in terms of minimum order quantities, to working with a company like H&M? Is scalability achievable on that level?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think one that hasn't necessarily been addressed a lot when it comes to next gen material companies and who we're kind of working with in the sphere. To give a bit of context, our first two groups of partners at Kiel Labs have been primarily in the fashion and activewear sectors. So ranging from mass market, like you say, the H&Ms, to luxury. So, you know, every kind of big luxury maison you can think of, we're either speaking to or working with. These companies and brands are evaluating our material in their own different ways, prototyping with a view to essentially bringing Kelsen to the market within a couple of months or up to a couple of years. But I think first and foremost, they're all really unique relationships. We choose first and foremost as well brands who understand how we work. So that's, you know, everyone from those mass market brands all the way to the kind of more craftsmanship orientated brands. But the most important thing for us is that our partners understand that working with us is almost a development partnership right now. These pilots are really development programs, and it's where the kind of innovation takes off. So we're experimenting, we're doing dye trials, small production runs, very much kind of open dialogue. And again, regardless of it being a mass market brand or a luxury brand, we kind of view these customers as teachers, right? So we need people who tell us or teach us how all the things we need to know. So pretty much an unglossed version of what needs to be done within those certain brands. And I think a real goal of our co-founders is to make Kelsen accessible to all customers everywhere. We want to be a household name, right? Kelsen, we want it to be in all types of textiles, in someone's house, for example. And one thing is choosing the right brands, regardless of them being mass market or luxury. And we choose those partners outside that. But I think in order to achieve mass change, we do need to be working with those, the H&Ms, the Zaras. Otherwise, it's sort of a performance art. So I think in terms of our actual decision to work with potentially the kind of more mass market brands, that's definitely one of the reasons why. I think as we often want to villainize these type of brands, but sometimes they want to solve the problem and come up with solutions and have the investment to do so more often than you would think. So we do need those type of brands as well. And I think, you know, in terms of scale, they're the brands that are going to get us to the next level as next gen material companies and as startups. We really need that investment in order to move to the next stage. So for example, right now, we've proved that our technology is viable in both lab and pilot spinning facilities. And the next step is going to demonstration scale. To get there, which we have, but to get there, we need investment from those types of companies. And we also need, I guess, purely their orders, right? So we need brands that are able to buy a lot of material from us so that we can produce and eventually bring our product to market so it is accessible and available for everyone else. I think we see a lot of our peers, maybe this is more so the case a couple of years ago, I think it's changing a lot now for everyone, but we have seen a lot of our peers work exclusively with luxury brands, and that's great. That's amazing. You know, there's definitely a reason why that strategy works, but we are taking a slightly different approach in that we're not only working with luxury companies, but also mass market companies. That's for a whole different array of reasons, but, you know, scaling and working with mass market will get us to where we need to go quicker in order to have a commercially viable product.
Yeah, I think so too. So I guess here is the $50 billion question is, can biomaterials solve fashion sustainability crisis?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know what? It takes a village. I don't have all the answers to that. I think overall sustainability, regardless of its fashion or other sectors, it's really noisy, often without kind of, you know, a PhD. It's a mind-boggling navigation in order to choose the right materials and make the most sustainable choices. And it really requires as well, I think, customers to do all the heavy lifting. But I think if we talk specifically about biomaterials and their part in solving fashion sustainability crisis, there's a lot of brands, maybe next gen material companies, biomaterial companies out there now that are what we call green wishing with materials. And we're seeing it more and more. So they, you know, as brands think they're doing enough by purchasing things like recycled polyester. But the truth of the matter is that recycled polyester is still an oil-based material, right? So I think we're getting there. We're, you know, brands are making the right decisions or making better decisions because of the demand from consumers. There's an appetite there for better material choices and swap outs. But I think there's more to be done potentially. What we all need to start thinking about now is starting with the end in mind, to your point earlier, what happens with this material when we're done with it, for example, the end of life of materials. Once we start kind of focusing more on that, yes, absolutely, that is a really good place to start in kind of playing your part in solving fashion sustainability crisis as next gen material company. And I think, you know, there's definitely a lot of amazing next gen and biomaterial companies out there doing great things, but there's also a lot of next gen material companies that have certain product offerings which still contain, you know, plastics, toxins in their material development process. So a simple fact again is that if you make a product with good stuff, then it goes back to being good stuff. So I think there's a lot of work done and there's amazing companies out there doing great things in order to solve fashion sustainability crisis. But I think we can still dig a bit deeper as an industry and as a sector, and kind of continue to dig deeper when it comes to the solutions that we're providing, analyzing them a bit deeper. I think the amazing thing as well about Kelson is that there are so many other products on the market, seaweed yarns out there that don't necessarily have a lot of seaweed content in them. And Kelson, it's 85%, it's actually over 85% kelp biopolymer based, which means that the seaweed content is that percentage. When you look at it against other competitors or similar offerings in the market that are offering materials with under 5% seaweed content, it's significantly higher. And I think, you know, we need to start asking ourselves as well, like, what is the rest of the makeup of that product? If it's only 5% seaweed, is it actually a good alternative to what's out there today, right?
Yeah. And I guess one last question for you is, how are you working with your clients to make sure that end consumers are understanding the kind of nuances of a sustainable material, a biomaterial, so that they can separate what you're doing from greenwashing?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's actually something that we're addressing currently with the customers that we're working with. So we've got to a stage now where we're kind of ready to start exploring collections, right, with brands. And with that, with bringing a collection to the world and having consumers being able to buy it, comes a certain responsibility in order to communicate the advantages of the product and why it's actually better than the materials that consumers know and are used to today. So I think, you know, it's kind of twofold. We are educating both our customers in terms of why our fiber is good for the environment and why it's better than the materials that they're using today. And then it's their kind of role and responsibility to then kind of deliver that in the best way to their consumers. So to give you an idea, right now we're looking at care labels for clothing. And I think, you know, there's care labels and there's also fiber labels. So fiber labels are kind of where you talk about, I guess, you know, specifically and scientifically what the makeup of your fiber is. And then the care label is where you kind of talk a little bit more about why it's better or different to the materials that customers know and recognize today. So a lot of it is, you know, it's an education piece. It's finding the right way to communicate clearly the advantages over existing materials on the market today. So yeah, there's a lot of work to do, but it's definitely an education piece. It's about, you know, conducting the right kind of workshops with your customers as well to make sure that they can really deliver that message in the most succinct and clear way.
Great. Well, Laura, thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate it. How can people follow you and stay in touch?
Yeah, so you can follow us on socials. So at keel.labs. There's some great content there. It's always great to see kind of visually how fiber is made and created and kind of engage a little bit more about the company. And if you have any sales inquiries or you'd like to get in touch about a partnership, you can reach out to us on keellabs.com. There's a contact form there. So you fill out the form and I will reach back out to you.
Great. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
That was my conversation with Laura Hayes. She's the Senior Brand Partnerships Manager at Keel Labs. To learn more, you can visit www.keellabs.com or check out our show notes for more details. That's it for today's episode, and that's it for us for 2023. We'll be back in the new year with insights and expertise from the front lines of the future of fashion and beauty, including insights from CES, that's the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. For the latest from Electric Runway, be sure to sign up to our email newsletter, The Electric Runway Report, powered by Substack. I'm wishing you and yours the very best this holiday season, and I'll catch you in the new year.